Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro Call, the very first MV Pro Call of the new year of 2019. And, you know, I have to tell you guys, I'm actually really excited to hop back on these calls, and it's amazing to me how much I miss them. I mean, it's kind of nice, you know, to have a little bit of a break, but I wake up on Thursday mornings and although admittedly with the holidays being right in the middle of the week, it does kind of mess me up. I don't know if anybody else has days that are a little messed up. Next week, I'm looking forward to Monday being the start of the week because it's kind of there. Maybe it's just me where everybody's at some point during the last couple of weeks, somebody goes, what day is this? Is this, oh shoot, this is Wednesday or Thursday. But I really do love the opportunity to start my day off with you guys on this call every Thursday, and really do appreciate that you take your time to come in and join us as well. As always, it's my goal to make sure that we provide a forum where you walk away from it and go, yeah, that was valuable. And I think probably some turn out better than others, some of the calls. I do have all of last year's, all 47 episodes that we did are uploaded from last year. And, of course, you can get those on iTunes or on Google Podcasts as well. Or if you are a member of Motor Vitality, then you can go on to MotorVitality.com and listen to those, and as well as other years, previous years. So, I mean, literally there are hundreds and hundreds of calls and varying topics uploaded on the website. So feel free to check those out. A couple of announcements real quick. We do have we're starting our fundamentals course. So the WQA mentoring. So we just finished the basics. If you missed the basics and you would like to have us mentor you through the basics, then you can get those on recording and the previously recorded, and we will still mentor you live and help guide you through that. But we are starting the live fundamentals course on the 16th, on Wednesday the 16th. Our goal is to get everybody through, anybody that wants to get through the MEP, the Modular Education Program, to get them ready to take the exam by the time Vegas comes around in April, so for the National WQA Convention. Of course, you don't have to go to Vegas to take the exam. There are lots of different ways you can get certified. You can have it proctored in. WQA even offers a digital proctoring now, so you can do that as well. I want to take this time just to say Happy New Year to everybody, and I really do hope that it's a great one. If you go back and listen to, which I'm not necessarily encouraging to do, but the first call we did last year, in my world, I started off, I had obviously just, it was very obvious that I had just come out of an interesting life event and was looking at the new year as, let's go. This has got to be better. And it was. It was a good year. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to even bigger things for 2019. Today I wanted to start the year off. Well, let's start the call off the same way I do every call, which is by asking, is there anything anybody over the last couple of weeks learned that you wish you had known before? Is there anything that happened or that you learned that's worthy of sharing with other sales professionals across the country, or any questions we can answer for you or anything we can help you with?
Kelly, I have a quick item that I ran across and sometime in the last couple of weeks. Excuse me. So I think I mentioned before that if there's anything water related, people on Facebook in the community, they tag me. And there was a Facebook post. Somebody was asking for an inexpensive plumber or heating and cooling or somebody that would come out and remove the anode rod in this gentleman's hot water tank. And he says, I've gone ahead and I've tried doing it, couldn't do it. And so he says, so I just need somebody to come out and remove it for me and replace it with a different rod. And so, again, everybody becomes an expert. And three or four times, there were people that said, you know, all you have to do is unscrew it and pull it out and then put the new one in, or just cut it off and put it back in. And so finally, I went ahead and I posted on there, dude, you're going to shoot your eye out. You have to make sure to, you know, and I went through the steps of making sure that you, you know, relieve the pressure and how to do it and so on. And so, you know, then all of a sudden we started getting all these, hey, you're right. Yeah, great advice. And the guy private messaged me and he says, you know what? That's why I couldn't get it off, was because nobody told me to relieve the pressure prior. He says, I'm not a handyman. I was an executive in an office. And he says, I didn't know that I was supposed to, you know, relieve the pressure and drain it a little bit, so on and so forth. And so it's just kind of a little reminder that when we go into the homes, that sometimes when we go in there, especially, and this is perfect because hot water tank, I don't know how many times I've walked into the house and with, you know, an existing salesperson and they say, oh yeah, well, if you need to remove that rod, all you have to do is just, you know, the same steps, just go ahead and screw it out and put it back in. And we have to remember that not everybody is an expert in water, and we need to give them all of the steps or give them the resources. Like I sent him a YouTube video and he said, you know what? I was able to do it once I relieved the pressure, but nobody told me to do that. So,
well, you know, you've heard the story, and some of you on this call have heard the story of when, because that's when I came in the industry, it was the same way. Everybody kept saying, oh, it's so easy to do. It's so easy to do. And I went out one time and was going to do that for a customer, and not that I'm encouraging that salespeople ever do this for customers, and mostly because of the kind of stuff that happened to me. I did not release the pressure, but I had a breaker bar, and I somehow got that thing unscrewed and loosened, and it shot up. The anode rod shot out of the top of that thing so hard that it hit the bottom of the floor. It was in the basement. It hit the ceiling, which was the bottom of the first floor, and cracked the tile up above it. And it, I mean, and hot water is of course spewing out because of the pressure and everything. And yeah, it's a good idea to remember that. Number one, if you don't know what you're doing, you shouldn't mess with it. You should make sure that you know what you're doing. But that your point is really a really good one too, Jen, is that these people are relying on us to be experts. They, you know, even using terms like RO or TDS or, you know, industry lingo, that a lot of times people will just nod and smile. Oh yeah, that's exactly what I'll do. And you go back and ask them, do you understand anything I just said? No, but you seemed really enthusiastic in the way you were telling it. So yay for you. thanks, Jen. That's a good one. Anybody else? Any questions or thoughts?
So while we're at it, how do you relieve the pressure?
You go ahead and you YouTube it. So what I have seen done is, excuse me, where you go ahead and either lower the water temperature or turn the water temperature off the gas or the excuse me, the electricity, and then turn off the water to the hot water tank, and then the closest hot water valve or faucet, open that up, and then drain like a gallon or two of water from the bottom spigot in the hot water tank, and then that should relieve all the pressure that you need.
Yeah,
that's how I've seen it done.
So a lot of times people won't even turn, if they're flushing it, you know, just, so let's say they're not going to pull the anode rod out. They don't need to do anything like that. But there's the drain down, you know, if you want to flush the water heater, the best way to do that is to leave the water on. You definitely, if you're going to drain the water heater completely of its water, you definitely need to turn the heat off, because you'll burn out the element or the, you know, you can tear up the heating components in it. So, you open that spigot. They all have a spigot down at the bottom. Open that up, and you can drain it right from there. Just be aware that sometimes if there's a lot of debris or sediment inside that thing down in the bottom, which there is in a lot of cases, you may not be able to get that bottom spigot to stop dripping. You know, you may get a piece of debris or something stuck inside that gate valve, and it may, it might drip. So if you're ever going to do any of that stuff, it's a good idea for everybody in their car to have, you know, one of those hose bib ends, you know, that you can put on. I mean, you get them on cheap sprinklers. You can get them for 50 cents.
Like a little cap,
kind, you know.
Yeah.
It's a little cap, that you can screw on. So if it, you know, if you see that thing dripping down there or whatever, you can put that little cap on there and stop it from dripping. Not a bad idea. And you know, customers should drain their water heaters every so often anyway. They absolutely should be drained right after they put in a water softener. But, yeah, it's just... Stacey, it's just like a filter. You know, if your lines are under pressure and you've got that sediment filter on that line, that's what the little button's there for, you know, is to release the pressure. You isolate the filter and then you release the pressure off of it. Otherwise, you're going to tear the plumbing up and, you know, you're going to work way too hard to unscrew that thing because it's going to be suction cupped to the line because of the pressure that's keeping it on there. So you got to release the pressure in order to get it off there. So you're doing the same thing with the water heater. So you just turn the water on, drain a little bit out of there, drain a little bit out of the water heater, and you better take it off. So
I have a video that it's an This Old House video on how to change out the rod that I normally will send people, but I probably haven't watched it in about 4 years. So I don't know if there's a thing on pressure on that or not. I should probably rewatch that.
Yeah, I
YouTubed it, and there was a major HVAC company was the first one that popped up. I won't say the name, but they were the first one that popped up, and I think that it was probably the best explanation and video that I've seen on it. So make sure you tell them the whole story.
And some anode rods are more, there's water heater manufacturers are making them more difficult to exchange or, you know, pull out. And sometimes they're on, you know, they'll be connected to the inlet line, as opposed to just a hex nut. And just to, I guess while we're on this topic, and I do want to take a few minutes today and talk a little bit about this State of the Industry article because there were a couple interesting stats in there, but just real quick. While we're on the topic of water heaters, for those of you that don't understand what the anode rod does, what its purpose is, because it's a common question. Basically, inside of a water heater, when they build the water heater, they blow molten glass up inside the water heater. And so that glass puts a coating between the water and the metal side of the water heater so that you don't have corrosion, so you don't have rust or, you know, leaks out of that water heater. Well, even it's possible with that molten glass to have pinholes, you know, little bubbles or pinholes or whatever inside that that water heater. So what they do is they put the anode rod in there, and the anode rod is designed to dissolve, and it's like that slime or fix-a-flat for your tires. Okay, it finds the weak spots, it coats. Puts a slime coating on the inside of that glass, and it fills those little pinholes and puts a coating in there. Well, as we know, 85% of the homes in America have hard water. So the rod is made usually out of magnesium, which is designed to dissolve, assuming that you have some calcium or hardness in the water, because the hardness sort of builds up on that rod as well, and that prevents the rod from dissolving quite as fast. Problem is, if you have a water softener, the rod, that magnesium rod, the entire thing's exposed because you don't have the calcium in there, and so it dissolves a lot faster, and you get naturally occurring bacteria in the water that will eat the magnesium, and the waste product of that bacteria creates a rotten egg smell. But you really do need the rod. It's better to have the rod to protect the water heater to keep it from leaking. So usually if you're going to have a water softener, you want to put in an aluminum zinc rod, which has the same purpose. It just aluminum zinc, it dissolves slower than magnesium does. And so, anyway, it is a sacrificial rod. That's what it's designed for. Good discussion, you guys. I appreciate that a lot. Let's take the last few minutes of this and talk a little bit about some of the stats, some of the industry stats. I found these kind of interesting, and I'm not going to go through all of these. I'm actually reading most of this right out of the Water Quality Products magazine from December, and it's on the title. It's on the front cover. It's State of the Industry. Wait a minute. Am I? Oh, man. You know what? We're not going to read that one. I grabbed the wrong one here. Found it. I was looking at the December 2016 that issue. I just grabbed the wrong one. I'm looking at the article State of the Industry from the stats they did last year, Water Quality Products, December 2018. Wow, that was interesting. I just happened to look at that. I'm like, 2016, these are old stats. There were some interesting statistics in this. I don't know if any of you have had an opportunity to review this article, but it was kind of interesting. There were a couple things I wanted to kind of discuss with you guys and talk a little about. But I am going to read just the opening comments that they say here. It says, new technologies, regulations, and trends shape the trajectory of the water quality industry. Stay on top of ever-changing landscape. Water Quality Products asks readers about the issues most important to their business in order to bring you the annual State of the Industry report. This fall, WQP asks its audience about their demographics, budgeting, purchasing plans, and industry resources. Respondents also indicated the topics and challenges that will have the greatest impact on the industry and their business in the near future. A total of 103 people participated in the survey. So not a big sampling, but I did think that it highlighted some of the trends I think I see this pretty consistently, and some of the ones that I wanted to point out that I thought were kind of interesting is approximately one of the questions was approximately how many years have you been in the water treatment industry? Have you guys read this article? Have you guys reviewed this? Anybody on the call? This is one of the things that I see as a big concern, and we've talked about this before, but in the industry, how many years have you been in the water quality industry? Less in the over 30 years or 30 years or more, or the 20 to, so there's 30 years or more, or there's the 20 to 29 years, you have 61% of the people in our industry have been in the industry for over 20 years, 61%. When you add the 10 to 19 years, that number goes up to 85%. That means that 15% of the people in our industry, only 15% of the people in our industry, and this is consistent with other surveys that I've seen, and I think extremely concerning, 15% of people in our industry have only been in the industry for less than 10 years. We've got to do a better job, in my opinion, of recruiting young people into our industry and pointing out the importance of it and bringing them into our business and into our industry and keeping them here. Because otherwise, all the people that, you know, I've mentioned this before, when I go to the WQA conventions, when we're traveling out there, I look around and I just turned 48 in November. And when I'm the youngest guy in the room, it's kind of problematic. So, if you are in your business, if you are out there, I mean, we got to find ways to bring more energy and more youth into the industry. Otherwise, all the people who know anything about this stuff, they're going to be gone. I thought that was kind of interesting. You guys have any thoughts on that? And we've talked about that before on this call, but what do you guys think of that? You think it's a concern? What do you think explains it?
I think it's a huge concern. And a lot of it, it may vary with the pay structures. I mean, last year our franchisees changed pay structures on for sales reps. They have a straight commission plan and they have a salary plus commission plan that they now offer because they're trying to attract younger people. Because out of 7 sales reps, we have 2 in their 60s. Three in our 50s, and then we got a 40-year-old and a 35-year-old.
Well, what I think is interesting and relevant in terms of sales and what we're running into, and I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind, okay, is that our customers are becoming increasingly younger. Okay, the young professionals that are out there, you know, they're now buying homes or moving into into an area where they have families and they're starting to look at water treatment. They're turning into that typical customer, and we've got to find ways to stay informed about their needs and how they're buying. If we, as we age along with our customer base, don't stay in touch, stay informed about how our customers are buying, I think that's going to hurt us in the long run. So I think it definitely could have an impact. You need to find ways to really stay up on. I mean, it's incredible. I've got my daughter is 18, my son is 22, and they'll pop words out that I know I sound like my parents or grandparents, but they'll pop words out and use it in a way that I've never heard it used. And it's, you know, and we've got to be able to talk the lingo, you know, and staying in touch. This was one that I found that was kind of interesting as well. It said, which of the following have had a negative impact on your sales in the past 12 months? And overwhelmingly, almost half of the respondents said it was lack of skilled sales force. Second was material prices. Third was internet retailers. But lack of skilled workforce was 47%. This is something I have seen across the board as we've worked with dealerships across the board, is that it's hard to find. You know, everybody's running into the same problems, okay? It's hard to find a good installer. So I know how frustrating that can be to find good skilled work, right? So installers, service technicians, people out there, just about every company out there struggles with keeping up, especially as the economy improves and people are selling more. It's hard to find people to install because, especially a small dealership, you just simply can't afford to pay the buku major dollars that a really skilled worker can find. So, you know, the challenges of attracting that person to have them out there. Keep in mind that if you're working for a company that you're frustrated, you know, they have turnover in their service department, or somebody made a mistake, or they're doing whatever. Keep in mind that your competition is probably having that same problem. This is across the board. So, you know, just as you start to think grass is greener, it may not be greener. In fact, it probably isn't greener. In fact, it could be browner. it could be worse. Work with your organization to help them find people. You know, we should all be recruiting. If you believe in your product and you believe in your company, then help recruit. And help bring people in there when you find them. And it may be time to reevaluate your pay structure and maybe looking at incentivizing through production or sales or that type of thing. So maybe it's time to evaluate how you're recruiting and what you're doing with all of that stuff. I thought this was kind of interesting. Which of the following products or services does the company offer? This is what most of them sell, right? So the highest, and I say this all the time, this is This one I think is very relevant to sales, and this the respondents of this from people that are you know, saying what's the bulk of the products that you have that your customers are asking for. I think it's very consistent with the consumer survey that WQA comes out with annually, which says that only usually around 12% are buying water softeners, and usually around between 70 and 80% are buying bottled water or a lot of filters. And so this was interesting. The number one thing sold was filtration equipment. Number two was RO systems, their components and supplies. 71% for the filtration equipment, and the RO systems was 70%. Water conditioners and softening equipment was 60%. And I think it's that water softening equipment is high because I think that's a lot of times what – here's the thing. We've talked about this before on this call. Our customers are buying bottled water, which means that they're basically renting a drinking water system, okay? We should be focused on the drinking water. That's what they're. You go to any grocery store anywhere in the country, any convenience store, and you look at how much real estate in that store and on those shelves is dedicated to bottled water, and you realize that they're renting a drinking water system. They're renting it because there's nothing to show for it. They're buying it and it's gone. Okay, they're spending so much money on bottled water. We could put in a drinking water system at a fraction of the cost for way less inconvenience and for, I mean, it's better for the environment, it's better for just everything. But yet, when we put a display up at a home show, what we prominently, you know, there's five water treatment companies at that home show. We got some home shows coming up here probably in the end of January and February, so home show coming into home show season. And you go out there, and there's going to be five of these companies with, you know, the water treatment companies out there, and they're all going to have their prettiest, nicest-looking water softener out there prominently displayed, and that's what everybody's going to be talking about is the water softener. Well, only one out of every 10 people who walk by that booth buys a water softener. Well, I mean, all of them buy it chemically, right? Because we know that you can chemically treat your water. That's what everybody's doing. But a mechanical water softener, only about one out of every 10 that walk by are buying water softeners. 8 out of 10 are buying bottled water. So why we are pushing water softeners, instead of focusing on the drinking water part of it, I don't understand. I thought this was an interesting statistic that showed that, you know, when you're looking at filtration equipment, that's probably for chlorine, you know, for to take the chlorine or smell or odor out, and then RO was right under that, so 70% and 71% under that. I just thought that was kind of interesting, and it continues to bear out what I thought. We're pushing up against 9 o'clock here, Eastern. But I just wanted to point out a couple of these things. The youth thing, the age was a big one. What we're selling, I think, was a big one. The skilled workforce. You guys should check out this article. It's kind of interesting. You know, all the articles are pretty good, but. One of the other things, the last thing I wanted to mention here, of course, is the Water Quality Association. This is which of the following associations, industry associations, do you belong to? So, you know, Motor Vitality is a huge supporter of the Water Quality Association, and it by far is the biggest that are out there. Most of the people in our industry are associated with the Water Quality Association. And then about a quarter are associated with the regional water quality associations. So I put those two in the same category. But there are other organizations that you can learn from, the American Water Works, AWWA, and the American Society of Plumbing Engineers, the ASPA, ASPE, that you can also learn from and do things there as well. So getting involved, recruiting fresh, new talent into your organization and skilled labor, and evaluating, taking a look at what you're presenting and what you're selling to your customers. Okay, I think that's what we can take from this is the importance of it's a new year. Okay, a lot of us sit down and take a look at, you know, our health and the balance of our lives and that type of thing. This also is a good time to maybe sit down and assess where you are, you know, how you're paying and what you're how you're presenting your products to your customers. Okay. Any final thoughts or comments, questions? On behalf of Jen and I look forward to 2019. I truly do appreciate the opportunity to serve you all. And everybody be safe, and we will talk to you next week, if not before. So thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Thanks.